Anne-Marie Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
Timmery, I want to start by sharing an email I got just within the last few minutes. And I'm always hesitant to do this because I like to interact with the people that we email. And I actually have. I had just enough time before the show to return this email and am waiting for a response from the listener. But I thought you would find it interesting because it has to do with young, professional, unmarried women, of which you are one.
Right.
Check on all those. All right.
Yep.
So here's a young lady, Timmery, who has a graduate degree, works various professional jobs, and you are not married yet. And we were talking about this yesterday on the Patrick Madrid show. I was with a mutual friend of ours, Kaylin Green, who fits that profile as well.
Right.
So she's the producer of the Patrick Madrid show. I think you guys are similar ages. She's not married and does not have children. Right. So that young professional. Well, it came up on the show, I think in response to a caller, actually, that in fact, women haven't been doing that well as far as their level of happiness and contentment and all that stuff. And it's stuff we've talked about on the show before. But you look at the polls, the stress levels have gone up for all ages of women. And the happiness and contentment level has gone down for the last 40 years. This is just sociological fact, right?
Right.
That's just, I'm not making the stuff up. That's just, you look at any poll you want to look at, any sociology you want to look at, that's how it is. And of course, I brought up, as I am apt to do, that part of this had to do with the sexual revolution. Okay, here's the response, and I'm going to share this with you, and you let me know what you think. She says, I want to comment on your show yesterday and talking about birth control and career women not being happy. Your co-host, Kaylin, seemed to fit the profile you argue against. She's an unmarried woman of childbearing age who is educated, has a career instead of a husband. I'm also sure, and here's the key line, I'm also sure Miss Green knows that she is far better off listening to her OGBYN for her reproductive health than to a Catholic male. And okay, so a couple things. This is what I asked when in my response, and I'm waiting for a response to this. I'm like, well, what are you saying about our friend Kaylin, right? We're like, what are you assuming? Are you insinuating that in order for her to be a young, professional, unmarried woman, that somehow she has to be having premarital sex and being on the pill? Am I wrong in assuming that that was what that question is about, Timmery? Or is that what you got as well?
Right. I think that for some reason, so often these people find it so offensive. Well, look, she's working. Shouldn't we assume that she's taking the pill, that she's having premarital sex? And I think that often people might even assume without knowing me the same about me, or maybe their worldview is so different that they couldn't even fathom. For example, like you said, I don't only have an undergraduate degree. I have a graduate degree. I am working in the field that I studied for, which in fact, most millennials my age who are living, I will just say, a promiscuous lifestyle, whether they want to call it that or not, are not working in the field of their choice, right? They are struggling both on a personal, emotional, psychological level. And there's a reason that we're seeing people who are in the midst of a quarter life crisis or burnout in their 30s.
Yeah. So that's the profile, actually, the one you just described, right? The woman who has lived a more promiscuous lifestyle and she has focused on getting that career because she thinks that that is what's going to fulfill her, make her happy. That profile, I would suggest, is the one that tends to lean towards being overly stressed, not
right.
content, right? Now, Kaylin and you, interestingly, it seems like this listener can't even fathom that there might be a different profile. One where, and I'll just ask you straight out, Timmery, I assume when people, you know, 20-something female with a boyfriend, by the way, I assume that most people think, oh yeah, you're sleeping with your boyfriend and, right?
I think most people who don't know us would assume that. You know,
right.
You have extended, you know, family members who will make, you know, inappropriate comments, assuming that that's something we do. And neither of us ever have a sense of humor in those moments. Or, you know, right. There have been moments where my boyfriend just goes, how is that any of your business?
Right.
You know, I think he just is, instead of like arguing with the morality, just goes, what makes you think you could talk about something like that out loud? And, you know, it's so interesting because the lifestyle is just assumed.
Yeah.
Everyone assumes where you're living just like me. I don't assume either way. I don't assume that you're having premarital sex, that you're using hormonal contraception. I, you know, guess that it's very common and there is pressure on you to do so. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, are very weak and struggle even when they want to live a different lifestyle. You know, the world's telling you one thing. And basically that you have to sacrifice your fertility, that you have to sacrifice every type of relationship in order to achieve your dream or be more productive in life. And what's sad is that I think even for young adults who are living chaste lives, men and women who are working in their profession of choice or struggling to pay student loans, whatever it might be, I think that most of them are actually also facing burnout and exhaustion and wanting to change career paths. It's something that I hear across the board, whether they're in the midst of a very sexually active lifestyle or not. I think that it's just a sign of the time that there's a lot of pressure in general. And I think a lot of young people are maturing at a very different rate today. And so that lack of matureness, or should I say, I wouldn't even say life experience, but really ownership of one's life, the sense of responsibility, is part of what's leading to this burnout, because we have this self-centered attitude that makes us not want to have responsibility for things.
Yeah. Well, I think I buy that. I would add to that, though, Tamara, correct me if I'm wrong, but I suspect that young ladies like you and Kaylin, who are living chaste lifestyles, are better off than those that aren't. Like, your contentment and happiness level. The reason I bring that up is because, like you said, I think it's assumed that all young women out there, especially those that do have the degrees and are in a career, have got there not by living chaste lifestyles, but having the sex and all the rest of the stuff, because, hey, who's going to, you know, live into their late 20s without doing that, right? I have an interview this weekend with Arlene Spenceley. Are you familiar with her? She became famous a few years ago when she wrote, she's a journalist, she wrote for the Tampa Bay Times, I think it was, about how she was 27 and still a virgin. And, you know, the article just blew up, like, what? That's not possible, right? But all that to say, the profile that we're talking about when we say, listen, this is not a way to happiness and contentment, is that you think you're going to find happiness and contentment in the promiscuous sex and the job and the career. You're not. And those that think they are, I suspect, they're probably a little bit self-deluded or not being quite honest with me. So I don't think you can email to me and say, oh, well, Kaylin and Timory, like, they are the people that you're talking to. No, you're not, actually, right? Like, when we talk about the consequences of the sexual revolution, although I think the career pressures are part of it, that's not the main issue, right? It's the career in replacement of being female. Thing, right? That goes with the contraception and the premarital sex and all that stuff.
Well, and you know, what this makes me think of is just yesterday we had the exciting news of this royal engagement, right? And you hear all the buzz, you know, a couple who have really truly kept silent their relationship and tried to keep the media out of everything, secretly became engaged. You have, you know, Prince Harry and Meghan now. And I think it's so interesting because I was watching the interview live. Yes, I popped on once the royal, you know, proclaimer steps out. Did you see a picture? I'll have to post a picture of the proclaimer stepping out. He announced is every official piece of palace news. Well, just within a couple hours, they're on live doing a TV interview.
Does he say, hear ye, hear ye?
No? Probably.
I didn't hear him. That's what I think of. Official royal proclaimer. That's like the town crier. No.
But you know what? Yeah, the town crier. But at the bottom, it did say, because there's a little document and it says, you know, this is the engagement of so-and-so and so-and-so. And then at the bottom, it says, God save the queen. And I was like, no way. I didn't realize this was a thing still.
Oh, sure.
And well, what was interesting is in the interview, the person that was interviewing them kept putting pressure on Prince Harry. Like, you've asked her to give up her career. You've asked her to do this. Like, kind of, you know, in a softer way, but essentially accusing him of, you know, this criticism of patriarchy and pushing women into their place in the home. In reality, both Harry and Meghan have this response of, no, yes, I am coming to the close of a chapter. You know, should I've lived my career, I've been on Fringe, I've had all this opportunity, but now it's something that we're doing together. And so they're trying to communicate, no, I'm not closing the door on my life and my work, and I'm not closing the door on who I am, but we together are stepping into another chapter, and that took sacrifice.
Oh, interesting that they would think that she should, when it comes right down to it, choose career then over being married?
Right. I mean, that's essentially what they're implying right. The whole time.
Right. Well, you're going to have to fill me in a little bit more on the whole royal wedding, because frankly, now I did stay up to watch Princess Diana marry Prince Charles back when I was a kid. I remember this. It was the middle of the night, and we at that time in Canada. But frankly, I haven't followed the royal family since. But we'll get to that at the other side of the break, though. What you just said, though, reminded me of La La Land at the end of La La Land. And I'm sorry if this is a bit of a spoiler, but La La Land is this movie about the conflict between relationship and career, right? And these Hollywood stars. And in the end, close your eyes or ears if you haven't heard this. In the end, both of them choose careers over the relationship, and that's supposed to be, and that's what made that an absolute opposite movie of the way it was supposed to end.
It was such a sad ending.
And so that's, yeah, the whole conflict between career and relationship, and what are we made for? Are we made for career? Well, in a sense, we're made to use our gifts, but we're not actually made for career. We're made for love, and if you sacrifice love for the sake of your career, I just don't think that's ever going to end up well.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Before we return to our topic and you give me all the latest on the royal family, Timmery, we are recording actually on Giving Tuesday, which is the day after Cyber Monday, which is a couple of days after Black Friday, and you've spent all that money, and now we come in and say, well, whatever money you have left, maybe you'd consider donating that. And I don't send out emails on Giving Tuesday, because I'm just deleting those things left and right.
Oh,
it's
gosh.
Like, oh man, how many asks can I get in one day? My inbox is full. So most of you, I suspect, I appreciate the people on Facebook Live watching us right now on Giving Tuesday, but most of you will be listening or watching this later. And so we're not going to send you an ask on Giving Tuesday, but we would appreciate you considering, as we look at the end of the year and the tax deductible donations. Timmery and I work here based on the goodness and the gifts of others. Actually, there's nobody paying us a salary. It is a ministry of the nonprofit that I run, actually, Don Johnson Evangelistic Ministries, and that is operated based on the goodness and grace of people like you. So we would love it if you would consider and pray about giving a tax deductible donation at the end of the year. You can find out more about that at DonJohnsonMinistries.org, or if you go to TrendingDT.com, you can sort of navigate to the giving page from there.
Right. And just to add, maybe you're someone who is not capable of giving at this point in your life, or you're committed in other areas. You know, anything that we have come in, we put right back into the show in many ways. It is really helping to cover our resources and our time that's being put in. And the more you support the show, the more we are able to spread information and marketing for the show. Especially, you know, at this time, you have the ability to share, you know, send a text message over to a friend. This is a topic they covered on Trending. I know you're struggling or considering this topic, or you probably heard it in the news. Here's a Catholic perspective. And we're not just, you know, pushing doctrine down your throat, but we're actually discussing the challenges each of these issues brings up.
One of the hotter issues of the day, and I can attest to this having talked about it earlier this week on this network, and the phone calls lit up when we started talking about moms and their careers and balancing that with kids and what are we supposed to do. And I actually hadn't made the connection, but that's an issue with the latest royal wedding. So
right.
That's interesting to me. So is she going to, Meghan Markle, is she going to stop being an actress?
She's already pulled off. So this is why it was expected, because she's quit all social media. She already gave her notice in for the show Fringe. She's stepping away. She's even stopped her popular blog that she's been involved in. So there was this assumption, because she was pulling away from the public eye in her acting career and her blogging, that there had to be an announcement coming up. Now, because of that, because of all of the shutting down, I think, of her public profile in this way, it was very easy for some of the media questioning to say, well, look, you're making her stop everything she's been doing, all of the work she's been involved in. But for someone, you know, who is very active and involved in many areas, she's going, actually, I'm taking on a different public role, and it's a very active role. You know, they talked about how Prince Will and Kate, how Princess Kate slid right into that position because she didn't have as much of a public voice. And now you have Meghan, who has been active, who has had a Hollywood career, not just any career, but a career in Hollywood and in America. And, you know, has, in fact, and this is a big scandal as well, is she's not only American, but she's an American divorcee.
Yeah.
And, you know, you haven't seen huge issues like this since Wallace Simpson, right? And the drama that took place then with Princess Margaret, even, you know, the current queen's sister, you know, this question over divorcees marrying into the royal family. And so I think that you see a big change in the time, and also a change in how they're responding to these questions, which, surprisingly, questions that took place, let's say, 80 years ago with Wallace Simpson aren't taking place today.
Who was it that actually gave up the crown?
King Edward III.
Yeah, so he actually gave up his throne for love.
Right, King Edward III.
That's an interesting little... on one hand, we've got these people giving up certain aspects of their career. They're giving up the throne even for love. And we think, well, that seems okay. Is it only because it's the royal family that she has to do this? Like, could she not continue to be an actress, or that would not fit?
I think because she's marrying into the royal family, the wives of the immediate royalty have responsibility within the community.
Okay, it's sort of like a career on its own.
It is a career. And I think that's what she's kind of saying. You know, I'm stepping into a different role, but instead of being separate as an actress, this is something we're actually doing together.
There's other Catholic angles. So that she's been divorced, and she was born into a Catholic family, although there doesn't seem to be a real strong religious flavor to her family. There's some Jewish elements. She's biracial, which is also interesting. What do you make of this? You're more the royal person here. I'll be honest. I have not followed the royal family since Princess Diana married Prince Charles back in the 80s.
I assume.
Was that in the 80s? Maybe even the 70s.
I love all the stories of information we've had come out. I think listeners of the show know I was a huge fan last year of The Crown that aired on Netflix. And then I loved BBC's Victoria. And I actually am reading novels that follow the royal family. You know, it's fiction, historical fiction in many ways. And it actually covers a lot of the truth behind King Edward III and Wallace Simpson's relationship. So it's really interesting to follow these pieces of information and, you know, to see the change. You know, you go from a time just about 80 years ago, essentially, where we had women-only compartments where they would sit with only women in a train.
Yeah.
For the sake of safety, for the sake of propriety. And now you come to this interview, right, where you have Harry and Meghan talking about their relationship. And some of the first things they say is, oh, basically after having, you know, met up a couple times, we knew we wanted to get to know each other more. And they're openly talking about having shared, I believe it was a tent together in the middle of nowhere. And just the irony of it, you think about King Edward III, who, because of moral, religious expectations of, you know, the strength of character, he stepped down from being king in order to marry Wallace Simpson. And then you have Princess Margaret, you know, just a little bit later, that next generation. I just think it's so interesting that we have gotten to the point where, oh, it's no big deal. I can talk to you about sharing a tent, or actually even already sharing a home.
Yeah.
With my now betrothed, but wasn't betrothed at the time, right?
Yeah. So on one hand, I see the sort of the moral difference.
Pendulum,
right?
Swinging.
Yeah. You see a swing away from, well, there is a particular order. There's a particular status to different people. They have a nature. We're supposed to live according to that. And we slid away from that.
Right.
It almost seems to me to parallel the swing away from the veneration that we actually give to the royal family. It's interesting. I mean, as much as we are big royal watchers in America, it seems like there's a lot of Americans that are fascinated with the royal family. As much as we are, I feel like that's sliding away, where they're not put on the same pedestal that they used to, right? In the past, the royal family, I mean, he would not be marrying a commoner. He wouldn't be marrying an American. He wouldn't be marrying a divorcee. All of these things, right?
Right.
And there's good and bad to that. But the whole notion of, well, some people are born into royalty and they're on this sort of different level. And then there's the rest of us, the common people. In America, we've seen that more, I think, with celebrities, right? Like with actors. That's all sort of going away as in an age of Instagram, where everybody's equal. Like, everybody's life is equal.
Right.
And I think there's good and there's bad in that.
Hold on. Isn't it interesting that in the interview, you know, and Grant, about a year ago, Harry slammed the media and came out with a statement when they started talking about her as like some commoner from the ghetto, and started, you know, saying these offensive things. But in the interview, they never make a comment about where she came from in terms of, you know, context. They don't, you know, question that. But they are so offensive as to ask something about, you know, what's it like being the first, you know, biracial person coming into the royal family now. I couldn't believe that they asked that question. And I had so much respect for Harry when he kind of was looking at her going, well, she's a person like anyone else. And we're happy to basically, you know, I'm, you know, changing how he said it, but we're glad to just have any person to be part of our royal family and as a part of the whole team.
Yeah. Well, so I think I see good and bad there, right? Like the egalitarian notion that, listen, people aren't born higher than other people, right? The whole notion that some people are born royals and some people are born commoners. And no, we don't buy that anymore. You know why we don't buy that anymore? Because of Christianity. It's another one of those things, right? Like, women got elevated, so did the common people, right? Like the Western culture, the egalitarian culture that happened in the West because of Christianity, and the royalness, that's a little bit of a vestige of days gone by where certain people were born into certain status. On the other hand, now we don't have the Christianity to sort of bulk that up to help us understand, okay, yes, it's not so much that you were born into a family or anything like that, but what is it? What is it that provides us with our inherent nature, right? Like I think we've gone away from, rightly so, some of the pagan values that we had, right, in the West. Now we're still not sure. We don't want to go back to that. We don't want to exalt royal people and say, oh, you only have to, you know, marry other royal families. But on the other hand, what are we replacing it with in an age that we don't have the Christianity there? Like, what provides us our inherent value and our inherent, if it's, you know, it's not our birth, it's not our skin color, what is it? Right. And that's I think, where it's an interesting conversation you could have. Like, well, Christianity actually provides us. It's you're a child of God. That's what provides you with your value.
Right. And you're equal in that creation. You know, there's no separation of, you know, saying, well, this person's greater than the other. You're equal in creation, maybe not in talents, because you're good at one thing that I'm not good at, even just in how we contribute to the show. Right. And the behind the scenes work, all of these elements. You know, everyone has their strength in a different area, but that doesn't deny the quality of creation and the goal. I mean, truly, the eternal kingdom that has been brought out for you. Like, you have this opportunity. How will you follow it?
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Dawn Johnson Media. This is Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
I would just like to really throw a shout out to one of our supporters for Trending and a huge supporter of Catholic Radio, and that is Radiant and Valiant Magazine. If you have not checked out their work yet, they are a magazine for essentially young adults and teenagers, one for women and one for men. Radiant can be found at radiant.osv.com and Valiant at valiant.osv.com. They are an excellent magazine for you to check out, get to know. Maybe leading up to Christmas, it might be something to keep in mind, because this is a magazine that I think a lot of young men and women can benefit from, in the fact that they can see their faith coming to life in many different areas.
Yeah, magazines are so powerful. I just love the hard copies, and these are such beautiful magazines. They're so well put together. The quality is very high. So yeah, please go check out Radiant and Valiant, both of them at radiant.osv.com and valiant.osv.com.
In the meantime, I would love to talk a little bit more. You know, this royal engagement, we can't get enough, right? And boys, you're probably thinking, are they really talking about this?
Timmery can't get enough. Timmery is a royal watcher. I love it.
You know what's funny is my younger sister loved when Princess Kate and Will got married, and she's followed their lifestyle. But I think that there's something to be said of discussing it. You know, it's one of the top trending things 2 days later. You know, if you look at another top trending thing, you know, just Meghan's coat that she wore for the announcement is completely sold out on the line. But here's another piece that interests me. Not only is our Harry here marrying an older woman, but both of them are in their 30s. You know, Harry's, I think, about 33 and Meghan's 37. And it was interesting when they're actually asked about the topic of having children, you know, yes, they're open to having children. And it just, so many things start ringing, you know, a little bell in my mind going, one, it's pretty clear they've been living together off and on since they've been dating, right? Not only that, here are two people who are a little bit older and might face some challenges of having children.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be an issue. Now, she did not have children before with her previous...
No children
so
yet.
So no children. What do you make of the whole divorce angle on this?
Well, I think that, you know, from a Catholic Church's teaching, you know, she married another man, you know, and I don't know if she had a Christian marriage or if it was just, you know, running over to the courthouse, which also determines the validity of the marriage, whether or not it was a covenantal marriage, right, before God or not. But I just, it's interesting to me to see the big age gap between the two of them. You know, it would be one thing if, you know, Harry was getting married to some 20-something-year-old or even someone right within his age range. But, you know, you're speaking of a woman who's close to 40. And I'm not trying to sound offensive at all, but as a woman begins to grow older, you know, her biological clock is beginning to tick. And who knows what kind of lifestyle this poor woman has led in many ways, having had a divorce, having lived in Hollywood and having not had children. What will the challenges be for them in having children? And I think it's relevant to us who think, oh, look, Meghan has had it all. She's had a career. She's, you know, in the middle of her 30s, had the opportunity to shut down her career and now gets to play housewife. But for the most people, I don't think most people who have been through a divorce in the past and who have lived this active lifestyle will be able to just slide into a marriage that lasts their lifetime. I think most people would have a difficult time remaining married, having children, the difficulty within the relationship, versus here, you know, you have the royal family that puts a strong, strong sense of duty that we get married, we stay together, and it's a scandal if we don't. And so I think for maybe young women and men, especially young women who are looking at this, this isn't always a reality.
Yeah, that's a great point. So yeah, so we have a woman who, oh yeah, she went through divorce, no problem. Oh, she was able to have the career. Now she's going to be able to have the kids and the nannies and the caretakers.
Right.
It's like, yeah, that's a good point. Like, not everybody gets to be in the royal family. And you know what? Even with all that, I mean, I think that's an excellent point. And oftentimes the elites in the culture, right, have the money to soften a little bit of the consequences.
Right.
But you know what? Underneath those consequences, there's still going to be a lot of consequences. So don't let the gloss of some of this, right, fool you. There's still a lot of issues underneath that don't necessarily get reported.
And that we probably will not hear, because as it's been pretty clear, Harry is very private and does not react well to media attention. So I think that this is a relationship. You will see the wonderful parts, the effectiveness of their marriage and their diplomacy, but you're not necessarily going to see the challenges behind the scenes. And this is where I think we have such a difficult time today in this comparison of social media or reality TV or real life that's being, you know, polarized in front of us. That's not how life works. And it's very rare to quote unquote have it all, as some people might say Megan now has.
Yeah, well, it is very much like a sitcom, right? Or a TV show that's written. They're always written in a way that, hey, you know what? You can have as much sex as you want. You can have all the broken relationships in your past that you want. All of that is fine. You're still going to be happy. That's just people in Hollywood writing that stuff. Right.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's not real. So that's a great point. Good news coming out of the Middle East and actually all around the world, as millions of Muslims are converting to Christianity.
You're seeing Muslims in droves who are converting. You know, even just back in 2005, you know, this is 12 years ago, Al Jazeera Television, which is one of the main Arabic news channels available, can watch them online, was talking about how there were mass conversions of Muslims, as many as 6 to 8 million at that time in the Saharan in Africa. You also saw in Iran reported to have 3 million Christians, Indonesia with reports of 2 million converting each year. There's something to be said across, you know, Nigeria, Uganda, Mali, all of these areas where Christianity continues to spread in areas where people are suffering.
Yeah, it's the oppression, right? The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church is an old saying. And it does seem to be the case that where you see even, you almost see it's like where there's more oppression, the church is growing even stronger.
Right.
And I know we're, you know, very afraid of oppression. I mean, rightly so. We never want to ask for oppression. But it's better to accept the oppression and become a stronger church, ultimately, than it is to keep the oppression away and become a weaker church, right? If you're looking at, well, what's the balance here? Do we get to live without being oppressed, but we can't really practice our faith the way we should, or we're not really growing disciples? Or do we accept a little bit of oppression, but the consequence is that we become a stronger church, and frankly, we make more converts? The Muslim countries are showing that even in those very oppressive nations, the church is growing
strongly.
Right.
Well, even in the examples with Boko Haram acting up and trying to terrorize people in areas where there's been an increase in Christianity, more people just continue to convert. Because when they see the abuse and these examples of Islam pressing, you know, forced conversion or punishing people, there's really a press back that people see, here's a people. And not only do they love their God, but in their God, they are free. They are equal in creation. There's tremendous respect for women within that culture. And, you know, when you see, for example, on Fridays after their afternoon prayer, something that's done is the Muslims will go and chop off people's hands for having, you know, converted to Christianity, for being adulterers, in which, by the way, only the women are punished for being adulterers, not the men. And we could go on and on. You know, there are examples of a young boy who was a slave who was crucified on Good Friday for sneaking out to pray. Or two Filipino maids who were beheaded because they were caught with the New Testament. Here are examples of profound, profound, you know, oppression and martyrdom, truly. And look, the church continues to grow.
Yeah, they'll see the love and the peace and the joy that they have and that they're willing to lay down their life. The other thing they're seeing, interestingly, are visions of Jesus and the Blessed Virgin.
Wow.
And I've heard about this for years and years. Even before I became Catholic, the Muslim world was converting to Jesus. And you heard a lot in the Protestant world, you hear a lot about the visions of Jesus. Now that I'm Catholic, I'm hearing also that Mary is appearing to many, many people. But like a lot, this seems to be God's like primary mode almost of evangelization in these closed countries where you can't necessarily, you know, send missionaries in or whatever. Mm-hmm. He just appears himself. Pretty cool stuff.
Well, and you know what? A lot of Muslim women have a huge devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary, actually. And I've met a number of these women who have medallions of Our Lady. And I remember asking, are you Catholic? Kind of surprised. Oh, no, I'm Muslim, and we love Our Lady, and there's this respect. And I'm sure that women cling on to this more, especially in a religion and culture that can be so incredibly degrading toward women. And, you know, even working in the crisis pregnancy center, I remember having some women, one in particular who came through, and she was Muslim, and the struggles that she herself faced, even as simple as her husband not wanting her to be outside in the sun, you know, wanting her to have that very fair white skin, and her being, I mean, pregnant over and over again, and him not really being present in the home with that family, you know, she was so degraded, and that she actually, in this case, was just looked at as someone whose place is in the home caring for children. And we were losing the value of this woman's contribution in more of an active way. Not that what she's doing isn't good, but she was being suppressed.
Right. One more way that they are being evangelized is through electronic media. So TV, radio, internet. Again, you can't send missionaries into some of these countries, but you can send signals. And so, for example, there is a Coptic Orthodox priest who broadcasts to 60 million Arabs every week, does a 6-hour internet discussion show twice a week. And you know what? I mean, a lot of them have, if you have access to the internet, you have access to shows like Trending,
right?
And so this is another good reason to make sure that you're supporting and sharing your local radio network and the podcasts and all that stuff, because it's worldwide.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
I know as a man, I'm not supposed to be talking about this, Timmery.
I know, I offered you up here.
There's certain subjects, apparently, from the feedback that I get. So for example, you know, off the top of the show, apparently I'm not supposed to talk about sexual reproduction. Remember email I read off the top of the show? Like, well, what, you know, she should be listening to her OBGYN. And I'm like, what if he's a guy?
Right.
Are males are not allowed to talk about, it's so ridiculous, for one thing.
Right.
That guys wouldn't, you know, right, guys don't get pregnant. All right, fair enough. Does that mean that we can know nothing about pregnancy? Like, all doctor? I mean, it's so stupid. So, well, stop that. The other thing we're supposed to be not talking about is what women wear. And I know.
Where are the tomatoes?
you got to be careful. Again,
I'm digging your hole for you. Gotta be digging careful it.
Because the whole issue of leggings has become a big one. Are they leggings? Oh. Are they tights? Are they yoga pants?
Call them hot pants.
What are they? Because I know that some people are like, if they were transported into our time right now, they'd be like, why are all the women walking around in pantyhose?
In their underwear.
Yeah, in their underwear.
And in fact, your underwear are far more risque and fitted than ours ever have been.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so it's sort of a cliche in the culture right now that women are walking around in very, very skin tight pants. And the idea is, a lot, especially from the more conservative realm, is that men are distracted by this. Like, women shouldn't be wearing those because it distracts men, it makes you more into a sexual object, this kind of thing. And, you know, I don't want to discount that completely, okay? I mean,
I don't like it when people go down that path. You can't wear that because you're distracting men. You're making it hard on men. I really disagree with that. I think that, you know, sure, that plays a small part, but how you dress more so has to do with you, the signals you are giving off about yourself and the behavior that you are open to. And I think that, you know, this piece from Psychology Today really opens the door for that conversation. You know, I personally, Don, have chosen, for the most part, besides an exercising, you know, settings, not to wear leggings unless, let's say, you know, my butt is covered and a little way down my legs. Right. I don't think that it's appropriate for my butt and upper legs, you know, to be revealed in leggings. I think that it's, for the most part, inappropriate. You know, maybe if you're running to the grocery store.
Context is huge, right? I mean, you know, wear a swimsuit at the beach, probably don't show up to church in it.
Right.
You know, I mean, some of this stuff is common sense, right?
Well, and I think that, you know, I'm sorry to be so blunt, but the reality is that a lot of the time the leggings are too revealing. And I think that it's difficult when people are saying, well, she can wear that, but this person can't. Well, yes, there are some things that all of us can and cannot wear based on our body type, shapes, etc. But I think for the most part with leggings, what type of idea are you not necessarily trying to convey, but what's happening on a psychological level? And that's what I think we should get into. A recent study that was covered on Psychology Today talks about how researchers basically took a group of women and a group of men. The group of women, they had wear swimsuits, and some of them they had wear big baggy sweaters. Same with the men. Some of them wore swim trunks and some of them wore big sweaters. And then they went and put them in a room where no one could observe them, where there were no windows, and they could then basically do this test. And what ended up coming out was that the women who, well, let's actually get to the men first. The men who were wearing swim trunks actually did slightly better than the men who were wearing sweaters. I think this is a total guy confidence thing. I really do.
and they were all in together. They weren't. It was the same sex setting, right?
Right, same sex setting.
So all the men were together. This is how the test went. All the men were together, some in swimsuits, some in
big sweaters.
Yeah, big sweaters. Same thing with the women. And
not sweaters the men would feel uncomfortable, you know, less revealing.
Why do you think the men did better who were wearing swim trunks?
Okay, this is me. Like, and the article went nowhere into this. They didn't even cover it. I think that it's interesting. I think some men, you know, oh, I'm wearing, you know, my nice clothes, look at my nice fit body, or I have this confidence. Like, men are more willing to kind of, I think most of the time, just own something, especially with clothing. They don't care as much what people think. You know, if you're wearing a pair of trunks, like, yeah, I'm wearing a pair of trunks. Okay, let's do this. Let's do this. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, I don't think men care as much. The result of the study was that women got more distracted by other women wearing, understanding this correctly? Like, who you are distracting is not men, it's other women. When you wear your sexy outfits.
Well, and it was more so, it's who's more distracted? The women, but the women themselves who are wearing it, not other women. It was the women who were wearing the bathing suits, and they ended up expanding the study to leggings and other types of wear as well. So it's not just bathing suits, but basically women who wore leggings, women who wore swimsuits, actually their effectiveness at the test, they answered half of the questions wrong in comparison to those who were dressed with more covering up clothes. And what they showed is that women who wore leggings and, let's say, overly revealing bathing suits, right? And actually, in this case study, they only had the women wearing one pieces. They weren't super revealing. But what they showed is when the girls wore the leggings, they had a more tendency to self-objectify, self-harm, view themselves as objects, really, truly just emphasizing that they were less likely to be satisfied with their body and were more depressed. So what happens is, and I think that I would totally agree with this, psychologically, as a female, you wear leggings. Yes, some women are wearing them because they're comfortable. A lot of women are wearing them like, this looks really nice. I look fitted. Look at my legs. You know, everything looks good. I think there's a both and. And so when a woman begins to view herself just as an object and decrease her value in other areas begins to become compromised.
Yeah, you're much more self-conscious. And when you're self-conscious, you tend to move towards self-doubt. They weren't able to write the test well because they were so self-conscious about how they look to others. I mean, have you ever watched a girl try to walk around? They're constantly tugging at those skirts to pull them down, right? Like, you are completely self-conscious of what you are wearing at this moment. I get this. Maybe it's as you grow older, you become less. I don't know. But this report from Psychology Today seems to indicate that the self-objectification that happens when girls do wear more revealing clothes is mostly self-harm they're doing to themselves. It's not like they're projecting an image to others of confidence or whatever. Your self-objectifying is hurting you.
Right. And I mean, you've seen a change. Even in the Psychology Today piece, they talk about how, you know, the psychology has seen, I think he mentioned like over 800 campuses. And this study confirmed what he sees just walking on the campuses. I see the vast majority of teenagers today in high schools, he said, wearing leggings. I'll call them hot pants for the fun of it today. Hot pants. But I think this is what the girls are thinking. You wear the leggings, you wear the tank top. But he said not only a tank top, a lot of schools are changing the rules where all that has to be covered are your genitalia. So you can't show the top of the nipple. You have to cover the whole nipple. You've got to, you know, it's okay to show the belly button. So you're seeing these really short 4-inch, 5-inch shirts with a little bit of the stomach showing, and then these tight leggings. What are the girls communicating, truly?
Yeah. And again, it's not about distracting the boys. It's not that's not going to be the big issue. And it's right. What you're doing to the girls themselves. And so this author is suggesting that, for one thing, parents don't allow their girls to walk out of the house looking like that. Not because of what it's going to do to the boys. And I'm not saying it does good things to the boys. As a man, okay,
we're not
taking the guys off the hook here. We're just saying, for the sake and for the health of the woman, or for those girls, if you force them into something more modest, and this is where, you know, maybe school uniforms are actually a good idea, right? Like, you, it just takes the pressure off the girl to have to try to present herself in a way that's making her more self-conscious and ultimately probably wrecking self-esteem in many ways.
Right. And I think that so many women today are struggling with areas of, you know, what can I wear? You know, what options do I have? And I will fully acknowledge that a lot of the options out there are very troubling for clothing, and that there's a lot that can be done to find different options of ways that we can wear clothing that are good. And, you know, sometimes that changes your mindset of what types of clothes you're willing to wear. You know, I, for example, set a standard with how long my shorts have to be. For myself, you know, I have to have a certain inch inseam.
Sure.
I said the example, I won't wear belly shirts. Sure, I think I scandalize people. I'll wear tank tops. Will I wear a tank top to work? No. Will I wear a tank top in everyday life? Yes. Would I wear a tank top to mass? No. Do I wear leggings to work out? Yes. You know, do right. I wear leggings out that don't cover my butt and my front crotch area? No. I love wearing leggings. I live in Southern California where it's hot most of the time, but you want to wear fallish clothing? Great, do that. But have a sweater long enough to cover up, you know, in areas that are just too revealing or too much skin.
Hey, before we close up today, let me remind you that both Timmery and I are booking next year as far as speaking engagements. And got any that you want to, I know we're done for this year. I'm traveling next week to interview for the documentary, but I think we're done speaking for
this
year.
Holiday season is here. However, I know one of the kickoff things will be the San Diego Walk for Life, I believe January 20th in San Diego for anyone who is interested in coming. And I'm already lining up different parishes, a lot of, you know, pro-chastity and pro-marriage talks around Valentine's Day and Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, absolutely. So keep that in mind. I also do the chastity, sexual revolution type talks, theology, all sorts of things. So go to timmery.com or donjohnsonministries.org. And don't forget to find this podcast and subscribe to it on iTunes and leave a review. We would appreciate that. All right, we'll see you next time.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Don and Timmery. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.